Well, somehow I thought it would be better if I didn't watch, but I actually think it was worse. The music, the notifications, I don't know anybody else, it just gets my anxiety up there. If you weren't here with us last week, we kicked off a new series called Clockwise, and in this series, we're looking at ancient wisdom about how to use our time. This is not a time management seminar or series. This is looking, sort of zooming out and looking at our time based on the ancient wisdom of Solomon as recorded in the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you weren't here last week, you'll want to go back and get caught up on that. But as it relates to all of the stuff, just a quick snapshot of what we talked about last week, as it relates to all the stuff that just gave us anxiety, this is what you'll be happy to know Solomon said. He said, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, talking about himself. Utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. So if you just want to dismiss all the notifications and delete them off your phone, Solomon's giving you permission because it's all meaningless. And I actually thought I'd have somebody yell out amen when I read that related to the notifications. But Solomon, basically, he's asking a bigger question. He's saying, you know, look, so many of us experience things in life and we're trying to understand the meaning of why certain things happen and why they happen to us. And the things that we put our hands to, the work that we do, he asks the question, what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? And this is the very beginning, is sort of his thesis idea. He's basically using this phrase, under the sun. It's a Hebrew idiom meaning in the physical world. And last week we said that Solomon is basically saying, if all there is to this life, if there's nothing above this, if there's no meaning outside of this, it's just what we see and we experience in life, I'm not sure any of this has any meaning or any purpose. But Solomon came to a conclusion that there was more to this life than this life. And last week, we talked about how that resonates with many of us. And the reason it resonates with us is because Solomon says, because God, he embedded eternity in your heart. He set eternity in the human heart. And every one of us has a sense that there's gotta be more to this life than just this life. Well, we jumped it from the beginning of chapter one all the way to chapter three, because I told you in chapter two, it just gets worse. He continues to talk. We looked at a bunch of passages last week where he talked about the meaning of life and all these things that he thought were meaningless. Chapter two, I told you, gets worse. I wasn't gonna subject you to that last week. So we jumped to chapter three, and in chapter three, something changed. And he presents this shift in perspective. He says, however, there is a time for everything and every season for every, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. There's a literary contrast between under the sun and under the heavens. Meaning, if there is something above the sun, in the heavens, that under the heavens, there's a time and there's a season. We looked at this Hebrew word last week, zaman. It's the Hebrew word it's translated season, but it means appointed time. It's a specific time. There's a time for something such as this in your life. And something shifted for Solomon. So the question is, what shifted? How did he get from meaningless to there's a season, there's a reason for every season, which is where we sort of left off last week, that regardless of the season that you're in, God has purpose for you in that season. But what shifted? And the partial answer is experience. As a matter of fact, Solomon, he ran an experiment that most of us wish we could run in life. And it's actually in chapter two. Now, I know I told you I wasn't subject to chapter two, but that was last week. This week, we're actually gonna look at chapter two. And here's the thing, before we get to that, here's what I want you to know. Solomon, in this, he runs this experiment in life that I promise you, you wish you could run in your life. We're gonna look at it in just a second. Before we do, I wanna run a quick experiment, and for this, you're gonna need your phone. So I want everybody to pull out. I know it's always dangerous when you're the communicator. It's like, you're gonna have people pull out their phone, they're getting distracted. The whole message is about distraction. So pull out your phone real quick. I'm gonna run an experiment, and it's not whether I can win your attention from your phone, because I'll lose that battle, but I want you to pull out your phone. I'm not gonna make you scan a QR code. Some of you are like, oh gosh, what am I signing up for now? There's no QR codes. And some of you have done this before, but here's what I want you to do. And no cheating, by the way, you're in church. I know it's nice outside today, but clouds and lightning could come at any moment with the wrong behavior. So no cheating. Here's what I want you to do. One by one, I want you to close all the apps that are open on your phone and count them as they close. I wanna know how many apps you had currently running on your phone as you close all of them. And then when you're done, I want you to look back up here. Just close them all, one at a time. I don't care how fast you close them, just close them, count them as you go. Still a lot of heads down. People still going. Okay, getting some more eyes. Still, there's a whole section over here. Y'all, it's no wonder you hang out together in that section. How we doing? All right, some of you are still going. I don't have time to wait for you, so we're gonna move on. Real quick, by show of hands, how many of you had more than five open on your phone? Pick up your hands. Hold them up real high. Be proud. You have more than five. All right, keep your hands up if you had more than 10. That's a lot. More than 15? 20? 30? All of you are more than 30. That's amazing. I can't see the value. More than 40? 50. Look at all these people, more than 50. This guy's like, I'm proud. He's got his hands high as he can get it. 60, more than 60. She got two hands up, more than 70. More than 80. Y'all are gonna beat the last service maybe. More than 90. More than 90. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, more than 90, more than 100. More than 100. Is there somebody else besides right here? More than 100? How many apps do you have? Did you close on your phone? 110. Congratulations, you are the winner. 110 apps open on your phone. That's amazing. Here's what you'd be happy to know. Actually, it won't damage your phone, but there are some drawbacks to your phone. It won't damage your phone, but it will do two things. The first thing it's going to do is it's going to drain your battery. And this is actually this is actually related. You're going to have to give me a little latitude here, but this is related to where we're going today. It'll drain your battery because your phone's working harder than it's supposed to work. And so your battery's gonna run out faster. The other thing it'll do is it causes your phone to have poor performance. Certain apps are gonna run slower. They're not gonna compute as quickly. As much as you love ChatGPT, it's not gonna work as fast. It's gonna have to think longer because it's not computing as quickly. And you can all thank me later because now chat's gonna run a lot faster on your phone. But here's what I want you to know. These are consequences that are a result of your phone working too hard. But this happens in life as well. And just before we go any further, I don't want you to jump to any conclusions. This isn't what you think. It's not about spending too much time at work. Although you may be somebody who's here and you may come to that conclusion that, you know, as a result of today, that you know, you're working too much. But that's not the point. You're gonna see that's not the point of the message today. As I told you, we're gonna look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And you're gonna find this is unbelievably relatable. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, if you have a Bible, I'd love for you to turn to it, or if you have a device and you wanna follow along, I'd love for you to do that. Ecclesiastes, last week we looked in depth at chapter 1. We're gonna look in depth at chapter 2. We looked at a little chapter 3. We're gonna look more at chapter 3 next week. Chapter 2 begins this way. Solomon saying, I said to myself, come on, let's try pleasure. Let's look for the good things in life. But I found this too was meaningless. I decided to set out and seek pleasure and the good things, the things that everybody says are good and the things that'll make you happy and the things that you'll enjoy. And I found those as meaningless. So I said, laughter is silly, meaning the happiness that comes from the enjoyment of certain things. So what good does it do to seek pleasure? And after much thought, I decided, parenthetically, nothing. So I decided to cheer myself with wine. And while still seeking wisdom, I wanted to be a person of wisdom, I clutched to foolishness. And in this way, I tried to experience the only happiness most people find during their brief life in this world. Solomon says, I began with the pursuit of pleasure and discovered it's only an escape. It doesn't last, it's fleeting. I pursue those things and they wear off or they go away and it's not sustainable. And so then I escape into other things, into other vices and habits that'll keep me from the downturn or the fall off from the things that I thought were gonna make me happy. I discovered it only provides this pursuit of pleasure. It only provides a temporary artificial happiness, which, by the way, most people in life are settling for. And most people settle for that type of happiness in this life. I mean, that's what he says. That's what you find. Most people are just selling for that in this brief life. He goes on. He said, I also tried to find meaning by building huge homes for myself and by planting beautiful vineyards. I made gardens and parks, filling them with all kinds of fruit trees. I built reservoirs to collect the water to irrigate my many flourishing groves. I bought slaves, both men and women, and others were born into my household. I owned large herds and flocks, more than any of the kings who've lived in Jerusalem before me. I collected great sums of silver and gold, the treasure of many kings and provinces. As they conquered, he collected all of this. Much of it was collected for him by his father David. I hired entertainment, wonderful singers, both men and women, and I had many beautiful concubines. I had everything a man could desire. Now, I have to laugh when I read this, and then I hear people talk about how outdated and irrelevant the Bible is. When I have conversations with people, I'm like, this is exactly what we do. Solomon chased the exact same things, whether you want to admit it or not. Solomon chased the exact same things we chase in search of meaning and in search of satisfaction in life. He goes on, he says, so I became greater than all who lived in Jerusalem before me, meaning he had a greater amount of things and wealth and pleasure, all the things that under the sun this world can offer. I had more. I was greater than anyone. He accumulated and experienced more than anyone before him. Anything I wanted, he says, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. I even found great pleasure in hard work, a reward for my labors. I threw myself into my work to try to find meaning and purpose. I found that as a reward. But as I looked at everything I had worked so hard to accomplish, it was all so meaningless, like chasing the wind. There was nothing really worthwhile in it anywhere. Again, Solomon runs the experiment we all wish we could run in life. Maximum pleasure, maximum possessions, maximum experiences, maximum achievement, more than anybody else before him. To which many of us would say, I think I'd actually like to give that a shot for myself to see if I can find meaning and purpose in that. Like, it's not a bad test. And Solomon, in his wisdom, he's documenting this. He's going, look, I want you to know I worked so hard for all of this stuff. I gave it my focus. I went to a degree that nobody else, I leveled up to a way no one else had leveled up to before, to that sort of place in life. And I worked so hard to get there, and it pretty much amounted to nothing. I came to hate all my hard work here on earth. For I must leave it to others, everything I've earned. I did all the hard work, and I'm gonna leave it, and I gotta leave it to other people, and who can tell? Who can tell whether my successors, those who are coming after me, will be wise or foolish with what I give them? Yet they will control everything I've gained by my skill and hard work under the sun. If all there is to this and all that I've accumulated and all that I've experienced, and it all has to get left behind, if that's all there is, it's meaningless. Interestingly enough, I met with lots of people who have they've been considering leaving wealth to their kids. They've wondered this exact same thing. Like, this is why Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun, is because we still wonder the same thing. Some of you've wondered about your wealth, and you've wondered about the things you have and what's good to pass on to your kids and how much of a help do you wanna be? And some of you grew up with nothing and you're like, I don't want my kids to grow up with nothing. And now you're like, but will I spoil them? Can they handle this? And I've talked to other people who've passed off significant wealth or companies or things to their kids, only to later regret it. Then Solomon asked the question, and it's the question he sort of hinted at, but it's the question I want us to wrestle with and what I want to talk about for the rest of the time. So he says, so what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? What do you get? Not what do the people coming behind you get. What do you get for all that? Like, what's the point of it? What's the point of succeeding and gaining a certain amount of power or influence or wealth or pleasure when you can't take it with you and when it can't sustain and you keep chasing it over and over? He says their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. And even at night, their minds cannot rest. There's still more to worry about. There's still more coming tomorrow. There's still more to achieve. There's still more to get. Now, I want to push you just for a second to think critically for a minute. I want you to think critically, not just about your life, but about Solomon's life. The questions that drove Solomon are the same questions that drive us. Questions like, what now? I've already gotten to this place. I didn't think I was going to get to this place. Or I was trying to get here. What now? What else? What else is there? What, you know, this didn't satisfy me. And I thought if I got to this place in life, I would be good. But what else is there? What more can I experience in life? What about what they have? And there's always somebody that has more than you. They have a bigger house than you. They have a bigger bank account than you. They have more experience than you. They've traveled more than you. Like, what about their life? Would I be happier if I could experience those types of things? And then what happened to the other things? What happened to this other thing that was in my past that I thought was going to make me happy? And will that thing actually fulfill this desire I have inside of me for this satisfaction? Like, what's next? And this is the thing that drives us over and over and over. And if we think critically enough about it, Solomon's always looking beyond the current moment of his life. What's the next pleasure? What's the next project? What's the next achievement? You know what this is like? I've done it too. You're on vacation and your vacation's nearing its end and you're already planning your next vacation. Because you know this one's going away and you're going to go back and you go, I'm going to need another one of these. And this is what I really want to do, but you can't vacation forever. And it's like, what's the next thing? How do I get to the next moment? And here's what we said earlier is that he's driven by a sense that there's got to be more in this life. And we all have that inside of us. There's got to be more to this life than this life. And the things that I'm trying to wring out of this life, they're not satisfying me. And beneath all of that, there's a belief. And the belief that drives that, if we're honest, and you may not say it out loud, and you may not raise your hand if I ask you to, but the belief that's behind that is where I am right now is not enough. Where I am in life, what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through, how I feel about my life, it's not enough. And the meaning Solomon couldn't find wasn't missing from life. It was waiting for him in the moment he was trying to get out of. It was waiting for him. It was right in front of him. Because the reality is, the only real time is now. Some of you have heard this before. There is no time in the future. There is no time in the past. The only time is right now. Because everything else is either gone or it's not here yet. So the only real time is this moment. And the problem is not that life is meaningless. That's not actually the problem. The problem is we're often absent from the only place meaning exists, and that's the present. It's this present moment is where we find life and we experience meaning. He goes on, the next verse, he says, so I decided there's nothing better than to enjoy food and drink and to find satisfaction in work, to find enjoyment right where I am. This is his way of saying to the food and drinks about normal everyday life activities and to find satisfaction in the work that God's given to me that's right in my hands right now. I realize, he says, that these pleasures are from the hand of God. So many times we're trying to reach for something else or we're distracted by what we did not get. And the truth is we miss what's right in front of us, the pleasures that God has already placed in our hands. And I'm not here to lecture you about gratitude, but this is a moment where the wisest man who ever lived, who tried to chase and experience everything in life and experienced it to a maximum degree. And he's like, and all the while as I chased that, I missed what was right in front of me. True life can only be experienced in the present. And experiencing the present requires your presence. If you're not fully present, if your presence isn't felt, you miss the moment. Being fully present requires your full attention. John Mark Comer is an author and writer that I love and I deeply respect. And he wrote a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And here, in that book, he makes this observation. He says, your life is no more than the sum of what you give your attention to. And many of us are giving our attention, or we're allowing our attention to be captured, or allowing our attention to be divided by certain things. And your attention influences the direction of your life. I don't know if you remember when you learned to drive. You may have had an instructor that told you, that gave you some instructions about where to look when you're driving, because it affects where you go. I remember when I was learning to drive, I was about 7. I grew up in the 80s. We didn't wear seat belts. We were on a road trip in the middle of the night. The road's about this wide. You're passing cars in big metal tanks. That's what we drove back then. And I sat on my dad's lap, and we would have competitions between me, my brother, and my sister steering the car down the road in the middle of the night. It's terrifying. I think about it now, and I'm like, that was incredibly irresponsible of my dad. But it was a blast. And at 7, I remember, like, I'm always trying not to hit the lines because, you know, there's the little reflectors in the middle of the road and on the side of the road. And if we hit the reflectors, it's a demerit. And the goal was to get the least amount of demerits, so the least amount of points. If you get a point, it's bad. It's kind of like golf. It's over par. So, but you don't want to get demerits. So I remember getting frustrated because, like, I'm trying not to hit the lines. I remember my dad saying, just look all the way down the center of the road, because where you give your attention, that's where you're going to go. That determines your direction. And when your attention is divided, your life is diminished. When your attention is divided, your life is diminished. Because it erodes your presence in the only moment that matters. And that's right now. Hey, this is one of the things I love about the Masters Tournament. Some of you were there. I was not there. But one of the things that struck me watching the tournament is you don't see anybody doing this. Nobody's doing this. It's like nobody, instead of watching the thing they came to see, which is extraordinary, and all the beauty around it, they're not watching it like many of the rest of us do at other sporting events and at concerts and things like that. We came and we're there in the moment. We're seeing it live and in person, and we decide to watch it on a little, you know, 5-inch screen. But not at the Masters. You don't see anybody. You can't take your phone in there. And if you do and you sneak it in, they catch you, you get sent out. But here's the thing I think they understand. I don't think it's just for the players. They know if your attention is divided, your experience is diminished. It's the same as life. When you're not fully present, when your attention isn't fully in the moment, you miss it. Let me just ask you a question. What if we were to treat our kids' sports games like that? And our kids' activities and performances. Some of you are like, well, I'm just trying to document it for my, you know, for the future. It's like, no, you document it in your memory. I mean, what if you were to be fully, I got called out by my 10-year-old for this one. He's our youngest, and he's not afraid to call me out on anything and everything. And I remember after a lacrosse game, this is just a few weeks ago. And so I'm not pointing a finger, I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty, but I remember after the game, he's like, Dad, you missed it. He has a buddy on the team, his name's Cooper, and he's one of the captains as well as my son, and he said, you should have seen, it was sick. Cooper had this sweet move, like he shot the ball through his legs and into the goal, and he's like, you missed it. I was like, buddy, I was there. He goes, yeah, but I looked over, you were on your phone. He's right. I missed it. And even though he wasn't in the game, I took a minute to check out, and I wasn't fully present. And that's what he wanted. Parents, this isn't a parenting talk, but what your kids want more than anything else is your presence. Nothing else you give them can make up for giving them your attentiveness. I mean, this is the origination of, look, Ma, even if it's right after, hold my beer, look, Ma, right? Like, look at me. I want your attention. See what I'm doing. Are you proud of me? What do you think of what's going on? Like, I want you to be with me. All the research proves that presence is greater than presence. ENCE is better than ENTS. All the studies show it. Active mindful engagement is greater than any material gifts you can give your kids. Now, it's not about parenting, but your presence is what every one of your meaningful relationships requires. And it's what they desire. Deep relationships are forged by people being fully present with one another, being in the moment, experiencing things together. So what I want to do is for the last remaining minutes, I want to walk through three things that divide our attention or capture our attention or pull our attention in another direction. There's three things that pull our attention in different directions. And for some of you, you know, you're like super distracted, or your attention's been divided in lots of different ways. And so maybe more than one of these applies, but I want you to pay attention and see which one applies to you. Oftentimes, our attention is pulled backwards by things that are unresolved in our life. I'm not talking about, like, you know, tasks that need to happen or things you haven't done yet, but I'm talking about things in your past, things you've not really dealt with, things that you haven't actually moved past that are unresolved in your past. Past failures, hurts, regrets, guilt, betrayal, broken relationships. I've been pretty open about the challenges we had in a season of leadership and leading a church when I lived in Arizona. And I remember people always say, well, what happened? I mean, you always talk about how bad it was, but like, did it ever get good? And I don't ever talk about that part because it's not really the point. But at the point when things started to turn around and we started realizing, oh gosh, like we actually can pay our bills and we're like moving out of a really difficult season and new people are coming to the church and we're growing and people are being baptized. And it was like, as this thing started moving upward, I remember everybody's excited and they're like, here we go. Like we're excited for the future. And I remember I was tired. I was injured and I was not excited. I wasn't ready for the journey. And the truth was, is I remember going into one of our elders' meetings. I actually wrote him a letter. I didn't know how to articulate my thoughts in that moment because I was struggling, and I just decided to write him a letter and just say, hey, I don't know what to do about this. Like, maybe I'm not the person who cares for, but like, I'm not doing well. Like, I took all the arrows. This was a difficult season, and I'm not in a place to lead us forward. Remember, they were very kind and very compassionate and take the time you need. And I remember after that meeting, one of our elders pulled me aside and he said, whatever you need, whatever it costs, I'll pay for it. And he did. I went a couple thousand miles away to a place called the Blessing Ranch. Dr. John Walker walked me through all the hurt and difficulty. And what I didn't realize is all the hurt and difficulty, I was carrying that backpack that I just kept moving for in that season, because that's what you do when you're like fighting through a season and you're trying to fight through a downturn. I didn't realize all that stuff that I put in my backpack was on top of other stuff from even deeper in my past in my backpack. And I got to unpack all of that. Here's what I learned. Your past can refine you or it can define you. Your past will either refine you or it will define you, and you get a choice. You can either allow God to redeem and utilize the things in your past to bring you to a better place in life, or those things can keep you stuck in your past. Some of you have, and it's recently resurfaced, there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. It's by Bessel van der Kolk, which, by the way, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, if you don't listen to a guy with that name, you're like, what's wrong with you? Like, what are you doing? But he basically tells us this in this book. And again, it's really popular right now, but it came out like a decade ago. And one of the things he said in this book is that trauma distorts our sense of time in this way. Even though an event or an experience that we had happened in the past, your brain doesn't know the difference. Your brain thinks it's still happening. It's still current until it gets redeemed or healed. Those things in your past you carry, especially trauma. If you experience trauma in your past, and here's what happens. The past, our unresolved past, it paralyzes. It paralyzes us. And we get paralyzed by the things that are in our past, and it keeps you from being present in this current moment. This is why it's vital to identify and heal past injuries, because it's impossible to be fully present when part of you is stuck in the past. This is where we get the term arrested development. There's a part of you that never grew past that thing whenever it happened, whether it was in your childhood or your teenage years or a young adult, whenever it was in your life, that if those things don't get resolved, they pull you into the past and they keep you from being fully present. There's some of you that the past isn't the issue, that there's things that it's not about the past, it's actually about the future. And there are things for some of you that you worry about all the time, and it has to do with uncertainty. And there's things that you're uncertain about that are in the future. And because you're uncertain about them, you worry about them, or you're trying to compensate for them, or you're trying to make up for them, or you're trying to keep them from happening. And because there's uncertainty in the future, you have worries, you have financial insecurity, you have health concerns, personal safety. And I'm not hating on any of that. Like, it makes sense. All of those things make sense. But here's what I want you to know, and I love this phrase. Worry, borrowing on tomorrow's worries, doesn't get you anywhere, and you know this. One of my favorite phrases related to worry is Dan Zadra. He said this. He said, worry is the misuse of imagination. Did you know that Homo sapiens are the only species in the world who have the ability for imagination? And imagination's wonderful. Like, you have the ability to imagine things that aren't currently. This is how invention starts. You imagine something that doesn't exist, and then we work together to bring it into existence. It's extraordinary. But we do the same things with the things that we worry about. And we get, this is the shadow side of imagination, by the way. What happens is we get fixated on things that haven't yet happened, and maybe things that may never happen. And the truth is what if will always keep you from what is? What if? What if this happens? What if that happens? What if things go wrong? What if will always keep you from what is? Someone gave me a tool a long time ago about things I was worrying about. And this is what they said. If you're overcome by worry, maybe it's in a certain area of your life. Here's what you do. You write down everything about that thing that you're worried about. All the potential consequences. Write out all your what ifs. Write them all down. And then go through the list and scratch out all the things you can't control. Because there's nothing you can do about those things anyway. And then do something. Take action about the things you can control. Make a list of all the things that are the what ifs. All the things you're worried about. Scratch off all the ones you can't control, and then do something about the ones you can, and you say, okay, God, I'm gonna do my part. The rest of that, that's up to you. As we talked about last week, you have me in this season for a reason. You've appointed this time, you've appointed this the circumstance that I'm in. Help me be present in those and trust that you're gonna take care of the future. I'm gonna take care of what I can take care of right now. I'm gonna allow you to take care of the rest. On top of that, remember where I was sitting in my therapist's office one day when he said, and by the way, you may not exist for the future things that you worry about. You may not even exist in that future moment. And so why worry about those things? Because worrying, it exports you, it takes you into the future, and it keeps you from experiencing the present. I mean, again, we're not talking about like distractions like media and social media and advertising, things like that. Those affect us. They create anxiety. As you're gonna see in a minute, they affect us in our present moment. But what are the things that are either pulling you into the past or pulling you into the future? The last one is the present. And here's what's interesting about the present. The present doesn't pull us backward, and it doesn't pull us forward. The present pulls us apart. Here's what I mean by that. The word distraction actually means to pull apart. And the truth is there are some things that are in your heart right now, and this is different, that are unsettled. This is different than unresolved. There are things that you're experiencing in your life right now. And these are things that are beneath the surface. But these are things that are beneath the surface that are insecurities or they're discontentments or disappointments or disillusionments that you're experiencing in your life. And as these things sit just beneath the surface, this is why you seek distractions in life. This is what makes it hard to just be. This is why we move towards doing instead of being. I need something to distract me. I need something to take my time. Instead of just seeing distractions, they're an escape. This is what Solomon said. They're an escape for an unsettled soul. There's something stirring inside of you, and because you've not found it, you're looking for an escape. And you'll look to all these sorts of things, even though you want to be a person of wisdom. You entertain foolishness for the sake of an escape. It's actually in the word distraction. The word distraction comes from two Latin words, dis and trahere. Dis means apart. Trahere means to drag or to pull. It literally, the word means to pull apart. And this is what distractions do in the present. They pull us apart. They keep us. They divide your attention. They keep you from being present. They pull you in different directions. Blaise Pascal, he said this. He said, the more we seek distractions, the more we avoid the very thing we need to face. Some of you have something that's just beneath the surface, and it's something you don't want to face. And that's why you distract yourself. That's why when there's nothing else going on, you open the phone, you turn on the TV, or you look for something to entertain you or to pay attention to. This is the same thing Solomon did. And the truth is what that does is it preoccupies you. We get preoccupied by things in the present to keep us from dealing with those things that are right beneath the surface. And our attention gets dragged apart from our intention. You want to be intentional in your marriage. You want to be intentional with your kids. You want to be intentional in your friendships and your relationships. You want to be intentional in your business. And the truth is there certain things that are in the present that sit just beneath the surface. And they do echo this idea there has to be more. But what they're really doing is they're draining the life out of you. And they're decreasing your performance. All three of these things, that's what they do in our lives. And they what they do is they actually thieve or they steal from us the life that Jesus made possible for us. John 10:10, this is what Jesus said. The thief's purpose, and I just put all these categories, things in the category of the thief. This is what, if you don't believe this, above the sun, not under the sun, outside of the physical world, you have an enemy. And Jesus said the thief, the enemy, his purpose is to steal and to kill and to destroy. But he said that my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. That's what God wants for you. Jesus, the rabbi, he came to map out a way. This is the way in which you should live. And he said, I've come that you might have life and that you might have life to the full. Here's an important distinction, last thing before we finish. The truth is, so many people have a full life. You have lots of things going on. You have lots of, no shortage of things to fill up your time with. But a full life does not equal fullness of life. Jesus didn't come that you would fill up your life with a whole bunch of stuff. In some cases, a whole bunch of stuff you didn't even realize was filling up your life. These things that often sit in the shadows, they sit behind the scenes that are taking up our attention, taking up our focus. They're keeping us from being present in the moment. Meaning isn't about adding more to your life. Solomon was proof of that. A life full of experiences but lacking full attention will always feel empty. You can have all the experiences, all the things in the world. If you're not fully present and it doesn't get your full attention, it will always feel empty. Life is found in being fully present in this moment, in this season. If you're wondering what to do with your time, God has you in a season. He's appointed a time for you. What's distracting you from the moments that God's placed right in front of you that he wants you to find pleasure in and he wants you to find meaning in? It's the last question. We'll be done. You should look up here. Which one of these Which one of these has the greatest potential to steal your presence, to steal your attention in the present moment? Is it something that's unresolved in your past? Is it something that's unsettled in your current reality, in your soul? Is it something that's uncertain in the future? Make no mistake, these things will keep you from the life that Jesus wants for you, because it only life, the only true fullness of life happens in the now. So my question is, which one? And what do you need to do about it? Who do you need to tell about it? You should tell somebody today. Even if you don't have any, you know what to do about it. You should tell somebody today. You should say it out loud. Here's why. Because there's no time like the present. Don't miss it. There is no time like the present. You won't get these moments back. You won't get these days back. God has you here for a purpose, and He wants you to find meaning and pleasure in the moments He has right in front of you. And above the sun, there's a God who makes that possible even when it seems impossible. Let me pray for you. God, I pray for somebody who's here today and they look up here at this board and they know exactly what it is. There's a hurt, there's a pain. There's something that's they've tried to leave behind, but it's chasing them. It feels attached to them. I feel like they can't get away from it. I pray you, being above the sun, would give them wisdom to see it. I pray that they would seek you as to how to heal and leave that behind, to be refined by it, but not be defined by it. Pray for somebody who's here today and there's something they're worried about in the future. There's a scan that they've taken and there's results coming. There's a surgery. There's uncertainty about a business decision. There's uncertainty financially. There's something in the future that's keeping them from being present right where they are. I just pray that somehow they would learn to trust you in that. They would be diligent with what they can do, and then they would trust you with what they can't. That they would seek you in that and they would find you and you would show yourself be faithful. Then God, I pray for the rest of us, which is most of us, that there's regularly things that are just beneath the surface that we don't really want to talk about, we don't really pay attention to. There's the discontentments, the disillusionments, the frustrations that keep us from being present and enjoying the moments that we're in. Help us bring those to the surface to deal with them so that we're not just distracting ourselves and skimming through life and missing the deep pleasure and meaning that you have for us in these moments, in this time, in this season. Just give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we heard today and the courage to do it. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.